and welcome to the Sunday Lunch Project Manager Podcast for Sunday, the 26th of November, 2023. This is your host, Nigel Creaser, and today I've got Glenn Parker on the show, the Positive Influence Guy. Enjoy. So, I have a number of sponsors, affiliate links, in the way that it's set up, that have kindly allowed me to share their services, really. The first one is Mike Kling, and Mike runs PM online PM courses, and it is a great resource for getting those fundamentals of project management trained, reasonably priced, and Mike presents it in an accessible and clear manner. You can check out some of his videos on his YouTube channel and kind of give you a view of where they are. But the code for that, if you go to nigelcreaser.com/onlinepmcourses, all one word, lowercase, that'll redirect you to it. There's varying different levels that you can buy. You can buy individual courses, you can buy pathways as well, if you like. And I get a kickback off those. Mike kindly shares me that. So if you do jump on and use it, I hope you find it really useful. I think he has money back guarantees and things like that as well. So there's very limited risk on that. So jump on that. And that again is nigelcreaser.com/onlinepmcourses. And enjoy. I'm delighted to welcome Glenn Parker to the show today. As a consultant for more than 40 years, Glenn has helped create high-performing teams at hundreds of organisations, including Novartis Pharmaceuticals, Merck & Company, Bristol-Myers Squibb, Philips Van Heusen, and many, many others. He's currently a consultant to Accenture, where he developed numerous online courses in professional and leadership development, including the recent webinar, Positive Influence, Finding People Who Can Help You Be Your Better Self. He is internationally recognised workshop facilitator, organisational consultant and conference speaker in the areas of teamwork, collaboration and team meetings. He is an author or co-author of over 16 books. I could go on. We'll be here all night. We won't get a chance to talk to Glenn with the great bio he's got. And his recent book this year that has come out called Positive Influence, Leadership in a Time of Crisis. Glenn, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Nigel. Looking forward to the conversation.
Great. Yeah, me too. Just tell us a little bit about you, a little bit more background about you, where people will guess that you are from the States somewhere. But it's a big place. So yeah. Tell me about where you're from, family, friends.
It's a big place, and I grew up in one of the biggest, maybe the biggest place, New York City. Basically, a child of a hardworking, working class parents. Pretty much grew up on my own on the streets, figuring things out because my parents were working, 6-7 days a week and some nights. And so I played a lot of sports, played a lot of street games that we kind of invented, because of lack of resources and facilities, and went to local high school and local university in the city as well. Pretty much spent a good chunk of my life, on the underground, on the subway, going back and forth all over the place. And so I went from there to graduate school, to university, to advanced degrees and the like, and went out into the workplace and spent a good part of time working for a number of different organizations, and eventually went out on my own as a consultant. And I always wanted to be an author. And I kind of was nibbling around the edges, writing articles, and trying, all along what I was doing was trying to get my courage up to write a book, because I revered people in our field, you know, the great gurus of management and leadership and organizations. And I thought, my gosh, can I ever achieve that? So it took me a long while to get there, and I had some help along the way. Someone who was a positive influence on me and encouraged me to take a leap and write a book because he felt I had it within me because I had talked to him about what I wanted to write about. And that was life-changing, Nigel. It really changed the trajectory of my life and my career. I wrote this book called Team Players and Teamwork. And I was fortunate to get a very good editor, and they, Josie Bass, which has now been folded into John Wiley Publishers, published the book. It's called Team Players and Teamwork, and it became very successful. And suddenly, you know, I was just an average guy, and then the next day I was a world-acclaimed author. But... So, fortunately, I knew the difference, and other people may not have noticed it. But it was the first book that really talked about what it means to be a team player. And we defined that in fairly specific terms. Also developed a self-assessment instrument that people would fill out and could get a reading on what type of team player they were. And it resonated with a lot of people to the point, and that got published separately in a separate booklet, and people used it in their own self-developed team building with organization, and I, of course, used it many, yeah, many times. And it's, I don't even keep count anymore, but the last count was, which was some years ago, and it sold over 2 million copies, this little 18-page booklet. And it's still being, it's still available, and people are still using it. So I went from there, and then suddenly I, you know, really got empowered and started writing more, and researching more, and talking more about teams and different kinds of teams, and went on from there. And of course, I also had a family. I'm married. I have children. I have grandchildren, and so a big part of my life. I got hit on the side of the head a number of years ago when suddenly, out of the blue, and I was diagnosed with cancer, and ended up with, and this isn't going back now, I don't know, to 25 years, so, you know, I'm still here, I'm happy about that, Nigel, I was a runner. I ate correctly and properly because, as you know, from being on the road, you have to take care of yourself. It's not easy to do, and I did. I hardly ever went to the doctor. I took no medications at that time. So it was a stunning thing. But I turned that into something positive because once I started to feel better after I was treated for it, I volunteered with the American Cancer Society, and developed. I wanted to get the word out to other men because I felt I was ignorant about this disease and how to control it, and how to maybe prevent it or at least get early diagnosis, which, as you know, is the key to successful treatment. So I started something called Run for Dad, which is an event that emphasize the importance of early detection and good health. And so it's been very successful in the last 18 or 20 years. It's a run and a walk, and people raise money for cancer research. So that's maybe a lot more than you needed, but it's also more about me because not only I have this personal side, and I also am a community activist. I work to try to make things better outside of my work life. So there you have it.
Oh, brilliant. That's interesting. There's so many things to unpick out of that. I think there's a. It's interesting about the authoring, and like you, I've done a couple of books. I've done self-publishing, which available now to actually do that, and there's less gatekeepers in many ways, and that's both positive and good. But I think that the thing is that something I heard not long ago was that, and a few authors that I've had on, and first time authors I've had on the show, and I think the thing is that certainly with tools, techniques and ideas, no one's ever had your experience, no one's got your ideas, and no one's got your voice, have they, on what you're writing. And it's kind of, if you're writing, if you're writing a book to make a lot of money, you're writing it for the wrong reason. If you're writing a book to help people, or you're writing a book to tell a story that you want to tell, that's the right reasons to do it. And then it's kind of, it doesn't matter if you wrote your original book and it helped 10 people. I imagine, whilst you're sitting there thinking, I'd like it to sell, if you help 10 people, that's still help. That's part of the, that thing that's inside you, isn't it? Is to be able to say, right, that's helped one person, that's helped two people. And if it's helped 2 million people and more, because I'm guessing they've used it more widely with other people, then that must feel really good.
Yeah, and it's significant because I'm always writing about what I'm doing. So when I'm out working with clients, working with teams, I'm doing things and then I'm reflecting on them, and most often they end up in some writing aspect, some publication aspect, because what I write for practitioners. I'm not writing for academics. I'm writing for practitioners, people who are going out, they're in the trenches, they're doing the job, doing often the same job I'm doing, and they're looking for help. And that's the, people contact me all the time about, well, what about this? Can I do this with your book or with your survey? And I'm happy to have that because that's who I'm. That's my audience. You know, my audience is the folks in the field who are struggling to figure it out and want help. So,
yeah, that's great. It's that helping of people is the reason. The number of times if it's done from a cynical reason just to create something to help people, that's got to be the priority.
And I also think, Nigel, that very often people come to me because of the books, and say, how do I write a book? And I say, let's sit down and talk, because I know I couldn't have made it without help, without someone who was a positive influence. And that's what I try to be also. I say yes to anybody and everybody, about how to get started, all this kind of stuff. How do you write a book? It's, you don't just sit down and say, I was born, anyway. So you got to think like, who's the audience? Who are you writing for?
Yeah,
that's one of the key things that people often forget, is that there's an audience. And who's your target audience? Just like you would for a consulting job. Who's the target audience for it? And, it all comes back very often, the goals, and that's what's critical. So,
yeah, I think I listened to Seth Godin's podcast, and he talks about that thing of knowing some marketing perspective, and it's the same for targeting a book, really. Some people go, well, who would you like to buy your book, or who would you like to buy your service? And some will go, well, everybody. And it's kind of, well, that's, if you're creating something for everybody, you're potentially creating nothing for any of them, because there's a niche, isn't there? And by identifying that avatar, that person that you're talking about there, who you've got in your mind, who is in the trenches, that creates, and I think it's really useful, because sometimes with even taking those things of thinking about how are you going to, you've got team members, and how are you going to manage team members? How are you going to work as a team player? And having that understanding of who those people are and what, or who the person you want to be to help them is probably quite a good way of looking at it. But I think it's, if you try and be all things to everyone, you haven't got a chance. There are people who are going to love you. There are people who are going to hate you. And there's going to be a lot of people in the middle who kind of need swaying. And that's where it is.
So you want to go in depth, you know, rather than, you know, cover the waterfront. You want to figure who that audience is and what you can do with that particular audience. And that audience can be pretty wide. If you say, I want to, it's focused on human resource directors. That's still a pretty large group
million.
Of people. So, but it's not IT directors. It's not, it's not marketing people. So there are certain groups of people that it's not. So it does have a niche, and that's what you're looking for. And I try to put myself in the head of those people who are out there and trying to figure it out.
Oh, that's brilliant. So it's probably worth talking about positive influence. I think you mentioned that there's like a series of books that you've done, and your latest one is The Positive Influence in a Time of Crisis. Do you want to just define what is positive influence? How would you describe it?
And we've talked about this. A big part of how we try to communicate is through stories and through quotes that we've collected through these interviews. We try to humanize it. We try to make it inspiring because someone else has been there and talked about it. So let me tell you one of my stories that this happened to me. This was my first real job out of graduate school, my first boss, and we've come to the time of my first performance appraisal. So my first boss, name is Larry, and Larry and I are sitting down, and he's reviewing my performance over the last almost a year that I've worked there, and it's going well. You know, he thinks I've done a good job. And I have to tell you that now on reflection, it was pretty boring work because I would look up, he'd give me a topic, I'd look up things, I'd write a report, and I'd hand it off to some people who were supposedly going to use it, and then I'd research it and I'd write another report. It was pretty boring. So we get to that point in the performance appraisal toward the end where it's your career goals, your development plan. And he said, well, Glenn, you know, what do you want to do going forward? And I had thought about this because I knew the questions that were coming. And I had observed that the folks across the hall in leadership development seemed to be having a lot of fun. They were traveling all over, and they were conducting leadership training workshops, and they were coming back with all kinds of great stories about the workshops, about the people they met, of course, about travel stories. And I said, you know, I think I'd like to try that, Larry. Do you think I could observe a class? So he said to me, Glenn, that's funny, because next week I'm going out to do two workshops in a week. There are two-day workshops. And he said, you can come along with me on this trip. He said, but there's one thing. He said, I can't really justify your travel expenses unless you teach something. So, you know, my lips start to quiver. What? Larry, what would I teach? I don't know anything. What do you mean? So he said, Glenn, We'll figure it out. We'll figure it out. And he did. And I went with him, and he gave me 2 hours to teach on the afternoon of the second day, which meant it was pretty hard to screw it up because the group had already formed, and everything was going well. Everybody was in a good mood. And I came in and did my 2 hours, and it went well. And I said, oh, oh, I like this. This I like. This I can do. And the lesson there was, Nigel, was that he could have easily said this. And I can imagine some people, some managers doing this. Why don't you teach the two-day class in one of the stops, and I'll sit in the back of the room, and then I'll give you feedback. No. He didn't do that. He gave me something. This is what we call positioning the person for success. He positioned me for success. He put me on the program at a time where it was very possible for me to be successful, and I did. And I walked away thinking I could do this. So positioning somebody for success, and I walked away thinking, and I didn't, by the way, realize what Larry had done. I just walked away awfully happy because I changed the trajectory of my life and my career. That's what I started to do after that, was leadership development and training. And I started working with groups and people and traveling and having a great time and developing. And by the way, you know, Larry was, you know, no one would confuse him with a great, you know, charismatic, wonderful leader. He just had a lot of good common sense. And he said, this is what this Glenn needs at this time. And that, to me, I now would call him a positive influence leader, because that's what he was on me. He, Nigel, saw something in me that I didn't see in myself. I wasn't sure. I didn't think I could actually do that. And he said to himself, Glenn can do this. And I did.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And it's interesting because I think we all need those in our careers, and constantly in our careers. It feels like you need people who... you could have failed at that. You could have screwed it up, couldn't you? You could have quite easily messed it up. We put you in a position where you could do it. But he was willing to let you fail and be there to pick you up. That's what it sounded like to me. If it had gone wrong, he was there. The impact... Yeah. If it went wrong, it wasn't so significant. The people who were being taught would have got majority of the... benefit of that training course. Might be marked. He took a risk himself, didn't he? Because he might have got marked. They might have marked him down, and you know, get the feedback on your courses and those sort of things. But so he's taken a risk. But he's willing to take a risk, but willing to let you take a risk and fail. But based on that confidence in you.
Yeah, but also he wouldn't have just sat there and let me fall on my face. I know him well enough to say he would have gotten up and said, well, let me clarify what Glenn has just said.
Yeah.
And he would have got it back. If the wheels had come off, he would have got it back on track by doing some kind of an intervention. And he was there all along. So that was... And he was also very supportive of me, saying, Glenn, look, you got this. You can do this.
Yeah.
You know, you wouldn't be here if I didn't think you could do it. That's positive influence.
You know,
it
really makes me think of a session that I did many years ago when I was presenting as part of... I worked for Barclays, and we were presenting a user group for Oracle, and we were a customer, and it was myself and my manager at the time, Steve Bradshaw. He's a great guy, great manager, and he was doing part of the presentation, I was doing another part of it, and we drilled it, and he worked there and he encouraged me. And this is it was the room for the 70 people, something like that. So like the biggest room I stood in front of. I was trying to think how old I would have been then. 20s, mid-20s maybe. But this was... I've done meeting room presentations, and that's probably as much as I've done ever. And it was in a fancy offices in Edinburgh. We'd flown up there and all that. You know, it was all this kind of big thing. And but he was encouraging me all the way through. And I remember standing up there with my face twitching, which I thought my it was going up like this. And I'd had my notes, and he sat with me and he drilled me through it. We'd gone through his bit, and then I'd done my bit, and encouraged me and supported me all the way through it. And I'd not had the notes, turned the first page, started talking, finished the thing, hadn't turned a single page. My blanket was there. But I think if that evening before, he could have quite happily sat there and gone, and I don't know whether he, from his point of view, would need lots of practice, but he might have been comfortable doing that. He had more experience than me. He could have left me to sit in the hotel room on my own, just shaking, worrying right. about it, and then failing the following day in that group. But again, it's that same right. that he, I kind of echoes that experience of mine there, that I'd never thought of it in that way that you're talking about there.
Yeah. This is what they do, you know, this is, and a lot of, you know, sometimes it's practiced, and we hope that, you know, people will learn how to be a positive influence leader, because you had to position people for success, but you have to be supportive of them, yeah. be encouraging of them. You also have to teach them certain things that they need in order to be successful. You know, how do you design training? How do you design that 2 hours, Glenn? Well, here's what you do. What are you trying to accomplish? You know, we all go back to basic goals, right? Performance objectives and the like, and list those kind of things. And what are the things you need to do in order to be successful? And then he motivated me because he saw that something in me and gave me that opportunity. The other thing, and this kind of gets to, we've kind of covered the range of types of positive influence leaders, is that he was also a role model for me, because I had watched him not only the day and a half down there at the training I'm talking to you about, but I had watched him many times in the past conduct training or presentations, and I watched what he did and how he carried himself and how he used notes and how he interacted with the audience. And I was picking that up all along. So you need that kind of role model too. And we talk about types of positive influence leaders. There's the supportive type that I mentioned, the teacher who teaches you what you need to know in order to be successful, someone who motivates you, who empowers you, as he just did, and also someone who's a role model. Larry, in some ways, he included all four, and many all of us have the capacity to do all four. We just happen to use one more frequently than others, but we all have that capacity, and hopefully the good leaders bring it up when necessary. They say, you know, oh, okay, here's what that person needs, and they do it at that time. So good.
It's interesting.
And good example on your part too.
Yeah, just what you say about those four leaders there. Do you find that the four positive influence kind of styles? Do you find that sometimes it's not just the style of the individual and the emphasis of that individual? Do you find sometimes it's that kind of, it's the combined dynamic of the person who, what you took from Larry? It may have been that the bit that you took from him, and I know he's got all of them, but there would have been bits you'd have taken from him that you wouldn't necessarily have taken from someone else, because you'd have a different connection with that person, but you might have taken maybe the supportive role from someone else rather than the role model role from that person, because Larry's the one. Do you find that kind of thing, that kind of dynamic changes on the people?
Yes, and what we say is that doesn't matter where you are now, you can grow, you can get better at any one of those. For example, let's say, well, you're typically not, you're more of a technocrat, so you're not that supportive. You're not the, you know, the person that says, you got this, Nigel, you can do it. you know, pat on the back and, you know, and encouraging and the like. But you can learn how to do that. You can learn how to do that. And so people will pick from other people, because our what we say to people is that here's where you are now. If you fill out the assessment, you fill out the, you know, where you are, it shows your strengths in all four of these styles. But we say, here's where you are now, but you can bring up this, you can increase in some of those areas by watching other people, by practice, by just, you know, people grow also by recognition. Someone said that you would be more effective if you did this. It would be more powerful if it was self-directed. And that's why we, when we go through this little exercise where people fill out the instrument and they get a score, and then we put them through a half a dozen questions where they eventually get to, going forward, I'm going to do more of this and less of that in order to be more effective. And by the way, leadership, as has been said many times in the past, is situational. So the best leaders are situational. They're the ones that look around and say, okay, this is what's needed right now, and they do it. They're not always giving you the rah-rah speech, because that's their go-to position, and that's what they do best. They're giving you what you need at that moment, and that what works best when you are situational.
Yeah, that makes sense, and I think that influence, and it's a model I'm sure you're aware of, the DIS model that I got introduced many years ago, and sitting in with that, and it's kind of different focus, obviously, but that whole thing of being aware of your strengths and weaknesses, and being aware that you've got all four tools in the kit bag, and you will use all four tools subconsciously, but that's that conscious. And in sometimes, if you're in that situational thing, you will, and I suppose it comes to the time of crisis, which will be quite an interesting conversation on that, is that you will lean towards one when under pressure, and sometimes in those situational situations, if you know, when you get a situation that is where there is a need to change, you may be under pressure, and therefore it's harder to spot the fact that actually in this situation I need to think about how I'm doing this rather than go to my go-to tool. My hammer isn't always going to be the right tool.
Right, you're always not. You can't always find the nail.
No, and that's it. The thing is that whole thing. If the only tool you got is a hammer, everything looks like a nail, doesn't it?
So that's my point.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's interesting that, because kind of taking that then to that crisis, that stress levels, and you talked about positive influence in a time of crisis, and I'm gonna. We had this conversation before. I was guessing, and I was assuming, that the COVID pandemic was one of the things that triggered you right in that. I'm guessing I'm wrong from what you said earlier. So what was it that triggered you to write that book?
Well, no, you're right. What happened is the first book, that most of which we've been talking about so far, was set to be released in May of 2020. And COVID hit February, March, and boom. And so nobody was interested in reading a leadership book at that time. And so we put it off for a number of months. But we had already thought about wanting to do a second book, because we really felt this idea of positive influence, you know, had some resonance in other areas. Hmm. And so we started to think about, well, what can we focus on? And my son, my co-author, said, Glenn, it's staring us right in the face. Let's talk about, let's see if what we think about leadership applies when there's a real major crisis.
Yeah.
And that's what got us to look at this. And I said, Jesus, yeah, you're right. So, we set about doing that, and we set about then looking to interview people who probably would be most impacted by the crisis in certain jobs in certain industries. So we went after and got two CEOs of healthcare systems. We did the same with hospitality, meaning restaurants and hotels and lodging. We went to transportation. We interviewed the chief administrative office of Amtrak, our train system here. We real estate, which, you know, you saw all the empty buildings and, you know, in downtown office buildings and the like. So we and malls and shopping centers. We interviewed CEOs of two real estate companies, and on and on and on. And so we asked them. We said, you know, what are your biggest challenges, and how did you handle those challenges? And they were quite open about it. I think a lot of them were ready to talk by the time we got to them. But yeah, so that's how we got to this book on crisis, and it's a powerful experience for us to hear these stories. I mean, it really was just extraordinary.
Yeah, it is interesting about applying stuff in normal, run-of-the-mill situations. I know that I saw that sometimes with. I was fortunate to do. I was on the panel for the PMI UK chapter's annual awards, and there was some of the ones that I was, it's public sector one I was looking at, and there was some of the stories and what people have been doing in that arena, and it's fascinating to see how the positive that can come out. I know it sounds ridiculous about how that teaming up, how organisations and how groups can get together in that time of crisis to create something positive out of it. One of the stories was around the some of the Nightingale hospitals, the extra hospital facilities that were thrown together with multiple different authorities and government organisations and commercial organisations that normally would have taken goodness knows how many months and years to have put things in place contractually and protected. They, in a matter of weeks, they came together and did stuff. And I'm guessing in that context, some of the stuff you're talking about, the positive influence in that instance, that I'm sure there are people within there, you'll be able to see some amazing team working sort of examples within there. Putting the badge at the door properly, not with that even subtleness. And
right.
I suppose there's a. I always look at the thing when I work from my audience out there, the project managers. I'm a project manager, and it's both a blessing and a curse when you have a project which becomes the most important project, because it's either in a state and someone gives you a golden ticket, or it's the organisation's most important thing to do, and you've got a golden ticket. So you've got that golden ticket that you can go and say, well, it's this project. And everyone goes, all right, fine, we'll trash everything, we'll give you the resources. But then you've got to deliver it as well. And in crisis mode, you've got teams that you're putting under pressure, you've got individuals that are being reprioritised and causing problems. So it's the dynamic there is really wild, I think. And I suppose what... Another great sponsor of the show, it comes in the form of Air Manual. Air Manual is a tool for documenting process, which and best practices. It's a company formed by one of my interviewees, Alexis Kingsbury. And I kind of summarised why my view of where we see documentation, a lot of my experience has been, people will document something
a process. They'll put it in a Visio diagram that gets loaded onto a SharePoint site or something similar. And then a bunch of that. So then once that diagram's been shared with senior management, they're happy they have a process in the business. But then the detailed procedures underneath it might be with documents, just poorly kept and not linked easily and not updated. And what Air Manual does, it allows you to put in it's a tool for doing this kind of thing. You whack it in, the service in there, get in there, put in your process, your flow, and you build it down to as low a level of detail, even to the point of checklists where people can check off they've done it. So it creates that guided checklists, easy to create, easy to maintain, and all in one place. And no one's kind of rooting around to find the SharePoint. And then when you change to new SharePoint services and all that stuff, it's all there. So if you pop along to nigelcreaser.com/airmanual, there's a bit more detail there and a link there to click on to go and get, I think they offer a trial and things like that. So it's something that I think can easily reduce the amount of errors, rework, etc. within our organisation. So take a look. Well, I hope you enjoyed part one of that interview. Come back next week and we'll finish it off. Cheers then. Hope you enjoyed that. But you're thinking, ooh, I wonder what the next bit's going to be. Yeah, it's frustrating, isn't it? You heard at the beginning of the show where I said there's a way around that. So if you're really itching and you want to hear the next bit of this show, jump down to Patreon, have a look, find the one that's got a little lock on it, click on it, and you'll be able to get the second half along with the first half all together. And you won't get this annoying bit or the annoying bit at the beginning that I just done as well. So, yeah, give it a go. It's only a price of a coffee. Cheers. So this is my final wrap-up. Every week you're going to hear this. You're going to get bored of it, but you can always click next podcast if so. If you have enjoyed it, if you listen to this podcast to the end of this show and you think that was great, I'd love to be able to help Nige out. There are loads of ways you can do it. The first and obvious way is to share the podcast, send it out to people. If you know colleagues and friends who'd benefit from it, you think they'd enjoy it, just send them the link. Grab one of the links, send them to www.nigelcreaser.com/podcasts. That's www.nigelcreaser.com/podcasts. And that'll push them over to a Linktree link, and it's got all of the different ways they can consume the podcast. If you are feeling generous and have a big bag of cash, you could grab a copy of one of my books. Obviously, they're available in all the usual places, and print and digital. Again, jump on the website, www.nigelcreaser.com/shop, and that will give you a list of all the different ways that you can contribute and grab copies of the book. Also got links to all my guests' books on there as well, where I get a little bit of a kickback from them. If you are of a sporting mind, I have a number through doing some of my judo and running antics. I've managed to secure a few affiliate links and affiliates there as well. So in there, somewhere in the sponsors page, there's links to those as well. So clicking onto those and grabbing if you're looking to get super fit, then that would be fabulous as well. And I get a little kickback from those. I have a Patreon account. It's patreon.com/sundaylunchpm. So again, you can ping something in there, buy me a coffee or whatever. And finally, obviously the most important is coming back, listen again, because the more of you that come back,
the more visibility I get, because there's more times that it's downloaded and all the SEO works and things like that. So yeah, that's it. So if you can help me out, I would be much appreciated. If you can't, don't worry about it. Thank you very much. Cheers now. Bye. My latest, the latest affiliate that I've got on the show now is Riverside. I use Riverside to do my interviews, Riverside FM. it kind of offers you a whole, if you like, micro studio management producer tooling, and goes beyond that. Has a really good free layer. And I've been using it for a while now. I find it really good. When I've had issues, even though I'm not on one of the higher paid levels, the support has been quick, responsive, and high quality, and people keen to help me. The organisation seems really good. The product seems really intuitive. And quality is really good as well. And it's a clever way of doing it is when you're recording through your browsers, so you've not got loads of desktop resources being used compared to some other products that I've used. And what they also do is they do they stream a lower quality version of it up onto as you're doing the interview, so you're not burning bandwidth while you're doing the interview and potentially impacting on the quality of the conversation. And then at the end, it uploads it, the higher quality from your browser. I mean, it's just a really good way of doing it. So if you are thinking of doing a podcast, know someone's doing a podcast, I would recommend using this tool. I found it really good. Best of the tools that I've tried using to date. And you can get that at nigelcreaser.com/riverside, and that will redirect you to my kickback page on their site, and there I will get a little kickback from them. So take a look. Thanks.
Well, it's goodbye from me, Nigel Creaser, and it's goodbye from him, the Sunday Lunch PM. Goodbye.